How's everybody doing? Good. So, thank you, Bob, for having me out to speak to everyone. And I didn't expect it. They told me it was going to be a lot of people, but I didn't know it was going to be this many. So, I'm going to start. I'm going to share my story of, you know, what I went through. You know, I'm 45 years old, and I have been through a lot, and I've recently come back to Christ, and it's been a long journey. So I'm going to get started. I was a lot like you guys growing up, right? I had a great home. I went to church on Sunday. I went to youth group on Wednesday night. I went through confirmation. I went on a mission trip similar to like Fusion, but I went to Jamaica. You know, so I did all of the stuff that looked good on the outside, right? It made me appear like I was a good kid, that I was, you know, what every parent thought that I should be. But, you know, the reality was, like, when nobody was looking, I was doing, you know, not what I was supposed to be doing. You know, when no one was looking, instead of going to church Wednesday night, I would go hang out with my friends at McDonald's and tell my parents I was at church. You know, not all the time, but sometimes. You know, it wasn't a regular occurrence, but it did happen. You know, but that's where it started for me, right? That's where the deception and the lies and learning how to manipulate, where it all started for me, was the very beginning. So, you know, this went on, and I made choices. You know, I started smoking marijuana at a really young age, you know, because I thought it was cool. I thought that, you know, going out, going down the railroad tracks, coming home late, sneaking out, I thought that was cool because that's what I wanted my friends to think. You know, and that's just how I felt. I don't know. I can't explain it to this day. I can't explain what made me do it, but that's what made me happy at the time. You know, and one of the biggest things I look back on it, and one of the biggest things, like, you know, I'm 45. I didn't get in trouble, real serious trouble, until I was 38, and we'll get to that later. But sometimes I wish that I would have been caught when I was like 14 or 15 or 16 years old, that maybe my path would have been a lot easier, and maybe, you know, I might have come to the Lord and come back to Christ sooner than what I did. Now, that's my journey, and I'm really happy with where I am today. But it was a lot of work to get here, and I've been through a lot. So, you know, going through high school, I played sports. You know, I played golf, I played basketball. You know, like I said, my parents got me a car when I was like 15. It had to sit in the garage. You know, I couldn't even drive it until I turned 16. So, you know, they sent me on vacation. Like, they did everything for me that I'm sure a lot of your parents do for you today. You know, then, you know, going through church, what happened when I was in high school is, like I said, I faked it. You know, I went and I didn't listen. I didn't understand what it meant to have Christ in my life. Like, I just didn't understand it because I didn't pay attention to what was going on. You know, it was more of like a social event for me. You know, more let me go see my friends, let me go hang out, but not get any kind of message, you know, like really ever. And then, you know, I continued my drug use kind of in high school was marijuana and drinking, like, you know, the weekend, like, that was it, right? Like, you know, I went to a really a prep school in Indianapolis, where I'm from. I'm from Indianapolis. And a lot of the, and I'm sure some of you are familiar with this, a lot of like parents were like gone every weekend, right? So somebody's parent was always gone every weekend. So we could always go to somebody's house, there was no parents. And that allowed us to do what we wanted to do, which was drink, you know? And we did. Like, you know, I'm sure it's no different today than it was back then. It was really easy for us to get alcohol. And that's kind of where it started for me, you know? And I remember, you know, one time somebody saying to me, like, in high school, they were like, you know, you're always the guy that can get something for us, you know, or do something. And that kind of continued. That was like a progression of my life. Like, I became like this guy who could always get something. And it usually wasn't good. Like, you know, it usually wasn't a good something. And so I went to college, and when I got to college, that's kind of like when life just, I was like, that was it, right? There was no more faking it at church because I didn't have to, right? I was gone. Parents weren't around. So then I could just kind of do what I wanted to do. I didn't have to worry about all that stuff. So I left, like, by the time, when I got to college, the whole idea of having a relationship with the Lord and all of that, that was gone. Like, that didn't happen for me at all. And so, you know, college was just a series of drunken adventures for the most part. And, you know, it didn't end well. And what happened was I eventually my drug use got to the point in college where, you know, I don't want to be too graphic, you know, I'm going to try to not keep it that way, but I don't know if my dad remembers this, and I'm going to, so I got to this thing where I had to move from Indiana. Things got so bad for me there, I couldn't stay there anymore. I had to leave. And it was all directly because of my drug use. But I didn't get in trouble, no legal trouble, because those consequences came much later, and the story gets much worse. So he came to help me move, and in all my wisdom, I thought I like had everything put away. And we lift up the couch cushion, and underneath the cushion there's drug paraphernalia. And to my dismay, you know, it was just a really bad time. And that was kind of where I was with my life. Like, here I am, I'm a wreck, right? I'm thinking that I have everything under control. I have everything hidden. My dad's coming to move me because I can't take care of myself at 28 years old. You know, I'm incapable of doing anything for myself at this point. And so we moved to Virginia. I was educated. I have, you know, I worked in the computer field for a long time. And I was fortunate enough that when I came out here, I got away from the drugs for a little while. But, well, I like this band. I'm sure maybe some of you have heard of them. They're called Fish. Maybe not. I was like the guy that, like, I'm going to travel around the country and see, like, this hippie and eat, like, health food and do heroin. Like, that shit makes no sense, right? It makes no sense. And that's what I did. And and so, yeah, that's the important part, right? So when I moved out here, all of my friends that I had accumulated over the years from seeing this band were all conveniently located in Northern Virginia. And so it didn't take long for everything to just escalate by 100. So I get this good job. I'm working, you know, I have a full-time job working in the computer field, making the most money at that point I'd ever made in my life. And I'm a pretty much a full-blown drug addict at night. I got married, which was a disaster. I married an addict like myself, and that, you know, it won't ever work, right? Two people trying to have a life together that are both using drugs is impossible, right? And so all of my friends were people who enabled me to do what I wanted. They were right there with me. I never had a friend that was like, no, Jason, don't do that, right? I never had a friend that had I picked my friends based on them doing what I wanted them to do, not based on somebody who's going to do something differently and maybe look out for me or maybe have my best interest in hand, because, you know, my best interest was always a selfish one. And that's really what it boiled down to for me for so many years, was I was so selfish and so self-centered, and it just ruined my life. Because any addict that will tell you that we chose drugs over everything else because we wanted to please ourselves, because that's what made me feel good. And it ruined my life for a long time. My drug use, you know, and the part of this story that you're probably noticing is missing is any kind of relationship with the Lord or any kind of relationship with Christ, that was not in existence for me at this period of my life. It wasn't even in the playbook at all. You know, I would avoid my parents because I didn't want to go to their house and hear it. Because I would go over there and that's what they would talk about, and I would just want to tune it out. You know? Because it was just something else that I didn't need to deal with, because, I just couldn't do it for a long time. And today it's a different story, you know. So as I said, my drug use was just, it was bad, and I was continuing to get worse, you know, and my drug use went from, the progression, right, was marijuana, alcohol, cocaine, that type of stuff. And then I was introduced to the one that like took me down forever, which was like OxyContin, right? That was first. And my story is no different than any other addict that will ever, ever talk to you, that you don't plan on becoming a drug addict. I didn't set out to let drugs ruin my life. You know, it wasn't something that I was like, oh, I'm going to do drugs today and in 10 years I'm going to have nothing. You know, like that wasn't the plan, but that's what happened. So I was introduced to OxyContin. You know, I was always like, my back hurts. Something hurts, right? Like, I need it. Like, I'm I'm 30-something years old and in perfect health, but something always hurts. And so, You know, so that's what happened. And then, you know, you're hanging out with your friend, right? The guy who is your best buddy, who you go see fish with all the time, or go to dinner with, or go to the bar with, or whatever, right? And he is more intoxicated than you, and you want to be like him. Because the choices that he's making are the ones that I should make. No. But that's what happened. That's what happened to me. That's what it looked like, right? I would see this guy sitting over here, and I'd be like, I want to be intoxicated like he's intoxicated. I'm not intoxicated enough. And so that's when I was introduced to heroin. And it took a while. I was able to maintain a semblance of a life, barely. Just barely hang on. Barely hang on to my relationship. Barely. How my parents were even willing to talk to me at times is still, I'm astounded. And my dad and I were just talking, and he does a blog. And he talks a little bit about recovery and addiction on his blog every so often. And I haven't seen the comment, but I know, my parents literally, they cut me off way later than they should have, because they should have cut me off way longer before than what they did. And, somebody said to him, I think, and I don't know, but maybe if you weren't such cold-hearted parents, your son wouldn't have chosen drugs. Which is completely ridiculous, right? Like, my parents were amazing people. And I was the cold-hearted one who put them through misery and torture and pain, like, consistently on a regular basis. You know? And so, the things that I've done to them, if I told you guys wouldn't even believe me. Like, I've stolen, I've put them through torture. I've been incarcerated more than I can count on this hand. Probably less than I can count on both hands. But a lot. And this is how selfish an addict is, right? When I got incarcerated one time, and my mom blocked me. And I'm sure you guys aren't familiar. You can make a phone call from jail. And the person on the other end has the choice of, like, hitting 5 and accepting the call, or hitting 9 and blocking you from ever calling them. She hit 9. And I'm sitting here. This is how my crazy addict brain works, right? Well, I didn't do anything to you. I'm the one that got myself in trouble. Why are you blocking me? It made no sense. What I didn't understand was the choices that I made by making this incredibly painful life for myself was a direct pain that I caused my parents. And it was a direct pain that, imagine I'm like their only kid, right? I'm not imagining, I am. Like, there's no imagining to it. And so their only son is in jail, not for the first time, but this is a regular occurrence at this point, right? And I'm upset because she won't talk. Like, how crazy is that? Like, it makes no sense at all. If I were her, I'd have blocked me a long time ago. I probably would have blocked the first one. Like, And so, the journey was, this is, it had led a lot. So, So the first time I get in trouble, right, I get off pretty easy, I think. You know, this is even better. Actually, the real first time I got in trouble, because, you know, this one doesn't count because you can't see it on my record. That's kind of still how I think, but I get in trouble, and I think because I'm going to pay for everything myself, I'm like, I don't need to call them to get me out of jail, right? I get an attorney and all this stuff, and, you know, in all of my wisdom, you know, I get out of jail, right? Well, this is what I go to the probation office, and I try to fake a urine screen, and I get caught because it wasn't a smart thing to do. and so he says, "Mr. Levinson, just have a seat. Have a seat right here. Somebody will be right with you." And somebody was. Two U.S. Marshals were right with me with handcuffs. And so I go to jail. And any of you guys know anything about opiate addiction? That when you don't have it, you get incredibly sick. And so I was incredibly sick, and of course, at that point, you're willing to do anything. So I went to treatment. They let me out, and they let me go to rehab. And it was the first of 8 times that I've been to rehab. And now, not all of those, some of those were outpatient, some of those were like in jail, but all of that stuff included, I've been to some sort of treatment 8 times. That's what my addiction did to me. That's how hard-headed I was, right? I mean, I just couldn't get it for anything, you know? Because I was talking about this the other night, because, you know, I was under this illusion for so many years that I could get away with stuff because I never got caught, you know? And so by never getting caught, it gave me this false sense of security that I was able to do whatever it is that I thought that I could do. I thought I could fool it. I thought I was smarter than everybody. And I wasn't. I went and did what I was supposed to do, and I lied a lot through this process to everybody around me. You know, I told my parents that I was clean. I told everyone that I was clean, that I had a job. I remember showing my probation officer my paycheck, and she looked at it like, wow. You know, like it was one of those kind of jobs. And I had to go take a drug test every month. And for every month, I faked it. And I did it for 1.5 years and got away with it. And I went in front of that judge, and he said, "Mr. Levinson, this is a very rare day that I get to let you off of probation." And I was as high on drugs as you could possibly be when I went into that courtroom. And it just continued. It is one more instance of me not getting caught that allowed my brain to think I could continue doing it, right? And I did. I did for about 3 more years until I just couldn't keep it together anymore. Like, you know, I've said this before. I was making like about $100,000 a year and literally could not pay my own rent because every last penny of it was going into my body. Like every last penny of it. Couldn't put food on the table, couldn't put gas in the car, none of it. Because of the choices that I was making. And at this point, I really didn't have many friends, right? Like, all my friends, like, the only friend I had was heroin. Like, that was it. You know? I didn't even know how to have a conversation with anybody, because conversations were like, what do you have for me? What do I have for you? Okay, nothing. I'll see you later. You know? Like, that's all the talking that I did. Right? And so, you know, really, at this point, you know, I'm to the point now where I'm willing to do whatever. I was the type of addict that I'm willing to do whatever it took, right? Whatever it took. And so I start committing and crying to support my habit, even though I'm making this money. But I can't hold the job that much longer. They gave me like a month's severance or something, and kindly said, go on your way, and didn't directly tell me why, but it, you know, it's pretty obvious. And so I go to jail for about a year this time. And in jail, of course, I'm reading the Bible. Because I still didn't read it or understand what Christ had done for me at that point, right? I still didn't understand what it meant to have faith. You know, I didn't understand any of that stuff. You know, for me, I'm still trying to fake it with my parents. Like, reading a Bible so I can tell them something so they'll send me money. Because I don't want to be hungry. You know? And that's what it was like. And, you know, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on what being incarcerated is. It's not fun. You know? It's not a good place. And, you know, that's really, you know, like, just so, that was the choices that I made. And I get out. They let me go to a treatment facility. And a 90-day treatment facility, and I got kicked out of that after 88 days. And once again, see, when you get kicked, when you're court ordered to something and you get kicked out of it, you get a probation violation and you get arrested. And so that's what happened to me. I went to see my probation officer. She said, hold on, Mr. Levinson, let me go make a copy. She goes out, the police come in, they take me. And so I go in front of the judge, and she finds me not guilty. It's a long, complicated story. And so once again, I get off. Like, I don't have to go back. And so I'm like, so I go to see my probation officer maybe 3 times, something like that, before I'm like, you know, sweating. Am I going to be dirty? Am I going to, what's going to happen next, right? I'm like super worried and like trying, you know, I'm learning everything to escape the system. And then they send me to this daytime treatment thing, and that's where I make friends from jail. Guys that I'm locked, they send you all to this treatment thing. It's all guys that are from jail. And that's really what I needed in my life, was to hang out with more criminals, right? And so, not that I'm saying that guys can't change, but just this particular situation was not a good one. And so I did the same thing in treatment. I faked it. And then finally, I just had enough and was like, I'm out. I went on the run, caught more charges, went back to jail. This time, they weren't so nice, and they sent me to the penitentiary. And I did 3.5 years straight in the state Virginia penitentiary. Which, I mean, it wasn't as bad as you might think, but I don't want to go back. Like, you know, that's for sure. But I definitely tried. Well, you know, I definitely tried to go back. If you're scared of it, be scared. right? If the idea of going to jail and going to the penitentiary scares you, let it. You know? Because I was at a point in my life where it didn't scare me. I was ready. You know? No, I didn't have anything else left. Like, my parents didn't want anything to do with me. The people that loved me didn't want to have anything to do with me. So they gave me an option. They said, Jason, you can go to treatment. I was like, forget it. Just give me the time. Let me do the time and send me on my way. And that's what they did. They gave me 3.5 years. But I didn't have anything out here left, really, right? So for me, I was just, at that point in time, it made sense. So now I get home. I make some more bad choices again. Here I was clean for 3.5 years. Didn't use a drug in the penitentiary, which is kind of a feat because I was offered drugs and there are drugs in the penitentiary a lot. So for me to not use them was kind of a big deal for me. And when I came home, I tried to not use drugs. But I thought I could sell drugs. Doesn't work that way, right? You know, this doesn't work that way. So anyways, long story short, I go on the run again because I'm not going to see my probation officer. That's just not in the cards at all. And they finally caught me after like a year. I don't even know. It was almost a year or something. You know, my excuse is I'm living in plain sight. Like, you know, I'm running. You just didn't look in the right place. Like, you know. So they finally catch me. And this is where, you know, at this point I'm broken. I just, you know, I go in. And here, you know, here's the part of it is, my family won't talk to me at all. At this point, they've completely cut off communication with me, right? They won't have anything to do with me. But I have somebody in my life that I love here, right? And so, you know, I go to jail, and I have a rack of new charges in like 3.5 years over my head. And I'm looking at minimum 5 years, right? But I'm telling her it's like 2. Don't worry about it. It's all good. It's all like, because I had hope, I guess. I don't know. And so, at this point, my mother has changed her phone number, right? I have no idea how to get a hold of her, and for good reason. You know, she shouldn't have been talking. My dad didn't know. You know, that was like the doorway back, right? I had to go through Dad, which was like impossible for me. You know, we couldn't talk. We didn't know how to talk. I didn't know how to talk, you know? So I'm in jail. I'm there like a week or so. And I was like talking to my girlfriend. I'm like, well, I guess I need to call my dad. I need to call and let him know that I'm back in jail. Well, I call, and they already knew, because, like, you know how mothers are. They have this, I think she has, like, you know, on her home, on her desktop, she has that thing saved where she can check whether I'm in jail or not with, like, a click. And so, by this time, I am just literally broken. And my dad, he picks up the phone, surprisingly, and he just goes off on it, like, which I deserve. Like, and there was a bunch of words said that I'm not going to repeat. And I deserved all of it, without a doubt. And so I took it, like, because, you know, like I said, it was, you know, he needed to get off his chest. And so after the phone call, I hang up and I call my girlfriend and I said, you know, for as bad as it was, and it was pretty bad, like it felt pretty good. Like, you know, like it kind of felt pretty good. Like it was like years of stuff wrapped up in 25 minutes, because that's all you get in jail. But, you know, years of stuff. And so we, through this process, there was a point in time where I just came to my father and I said, look, I'm broken. I don't know what to do. And I just need you to teach me about the Lord and bring God back into my life. And so we slowly started talking. He sent me a pile of books, including a Bible. And I read ferociously. And I studied. And I started to learn again what it meant to have Christ in my life and what it meant to be forgiven, because I had done some horrible things. And to the people that loved me the most. And so part of why I used drugs, right, was because I was so afraid of living life. And I didn't understand that I didn't need to be afraid, because Christ was there for me, right? And I didn't understand that I didn't need to have that fear. And it was an experience that I had. I'm, you know, sitting in a jail cell alone, which was not that abnormal for me at this point in my life. And, you know, I'm reading, and I started to really understand what it meant when God would speak to me. What reading Scripture meant, and how I could have it in my life, and have it really mean something that I can read and take it away. And we were talking this morning, and I said the biggest thing and how I want to mention is 2 Corinthians 5:17, that Lord has given me that my old life is gone and a new life has begun because of Christ. And that is where I am today, right? I'm able to come in here and give it to you truthfully and honestly and from my heart, because this is how I feel, right? I don't, because believe me, I wasn't the type to go out of my way to do anything that I didn't want to do at all. And so it really means a lot that Bob has asked me to come out here today. You know, and I think, you know, what, you know, and I need to mention this too, is why some of these books that he sent me, right? And Katie's here. She wrote me letters. Josh is here. He came. He wrote me letters. These are people I never met that wrote me letters to encourage me to have a relationship with the Lord. And it is, it's just been an amazing journey for me to date. And so one of the things that really set my journey off, right? Because I was so afraid of, this sounds crazy because I just talked about how easy it is to be in jail, but I was so afraid to go back to the penitentiary, right? I did not want to go. I'm willing to do anything. And that anything for me ended up being finding and getting a relationship with the Lord. And I didn't know that when I set out that was the path that I was going to take, and that's where I was going to end up. But that's what happened. And so Mark Batterson, an author and also a minister of the National Community Church in Washington, D.C., he wrote a book, and I like to mention this, but he wrote a book, In a Pit with a Lion on a Snowy Day, and that's the first book that my dad sent me. You know, and I've read this book like four or five times back to back. Like if you see my copy of it, it's like underlined, and it's like, you know, it's like you were reading it for school or something to take a test, right? And the premise of the book is to chase your biggest dream. Like, you know, he's talking about, a lot of what he talks about in the book is like, whatever your biggest dream might be, don't be afraid to step out and chase it. Because if you don't, you don't know what's going to happen, right? You don't know. The Lord can answer all of your biggest dreams, but you got to chase them. For me, I read it and then I reread it again, but I read it this time with the premise of, what happens if I don't chase this relationship with God? Where is my life going to be? And that's really what started my journey. And I started to understand things about the way the world works, right? Like I started reading, I studied Ephesians and like spiritual warfare and how Satan is out there. And for me, like, you know, because people don't think of it sometimes, and you guys, I don't know where you are, but the addiction isn't a disease, right? Yeah, it's a choice that I made, but eventually my brain chemistry and this has got so diluted that it became a disease for me. But now that I'm recovering, right? I'm recovering from my disease. I'm not recovered, you know? And I'm clear-headed as I've been in a long time. I understand that it's not just a disease, but it's Satan always at the doorstep trying to come in. And that has been like just a huge eye-opening experience for me to understand where it comes from, and that the Lord is there, and that through doing things like reading scripture and praying and doing all this stuff and going to church that I can combat it and I can fight it. And so it has changed the way that I live my life today. You know, life is good, right? I went from working in the computer field. I was a software engineer, right? Like I built like crazy websites and stuff like that. And now I work on a food truck, but I love it, you know, like, and it's good to me. I have people in my life again. You know, this is the first, you guys, like, this is the first time. I can't even tell you the last time I saw my dad on Father's Day. And that's no lie. I'm not making it up. Like, I'm really not. Like, I can't tell you the last time. I got to spend Christmas with my parents for the first time in 8 years. Imagine that, 8 years. And it wasn't because I wasn't around. I mean, I was a mile away from them at one Christmas. They just didn't want to be around me, but I couldn't blame them. You know? So, it's, you know, like, life is good. And I give all the glory to the life that I have today to God. Without a doubt. You know, I get to come to church when I can, but it's, you know, I also spend a lot of time reading. I listen to every sermon, even if I'm not here. I surround myself with people today that encourage me to make right choices, that encourage me to live life, you know, the way it is. I went to early service, and this morning I get a text from a friend of mine that's in recovery. And he just texted me and he said, "Happy Father's Day. I hope you have a great day." You know, and it, you know, I have people in my life today that do things like that, that love me as a friend and as a son and as a boyfriend. And you can count on me. If you ask me to do something, I'm going to show up. You know, if I can help you, I will. You know, and so I have a long way to go. I'm far from perfect, things. We all are. And so, but that's it, I guess. You know, life is pretty good. And I don't really know if I have anything else left to say, you know, other than thank you very much for having me.
That was awesome. I'm going to ask a couple questions, and if we still have time, I'm going to let the crowd ask some questions. But, where in your journey would you say you found Christ? You kind of walked through it. I didn't know if you could highlight that.
I mean, it was definitely when I was, I was always. I was introduced to Christ early on, that, you know, really actually build having a relationship with Christ was like when I really understood what it meant for what Christ did for me, that he died and I could be forgiven for the things that I've done, right? Because that's what caused me so many problems.
And I think that's, you know, where even as a youth pastor here, I know that a lot of you guys have grown up around Jesus, gone to church, Awanas, things like that. And I never take it for granted that you, like you just described, have come to that point where you realize he died for me. And the way that I'm changed is by actually inviting him in, taking that for me, not just knowing about it, but inviting him in. And it's really cool. I know that you and I got to talk through it. But just the change. Because it's easy to change, you know, short term for when the heat is on, you know. But God has continued to help you sustain it. I think that is definitely the power of God, which is awesome. How would you? I know we talked even a little bit more in depth of like, I know where you are is in the hands of God, and there you are safe. But you know, as you said, the attack comes, and so you highlighted, I have friends that are there for me, keep me focused on the right thing. What else keeps you locked on to keep going forward and not letting Satan kind of pull you back?
I mean, you know, for me, it's prayer, right? Like, prayer is a huge part of my life today. Like, I didn't understand prayer. I didn't understand what it meant. You know, for me, it was like, let me get out of jail kind of prayer, like a foxhole prayer type stuff, right? Like, that's what prayer was to me forever. You know, I didn't understand that, you know, it's about giving glory to God and praising the Lord for how he works in my life. And, you know, so that is a big part of that. You know, obviously, reading, just doing things to keep me focused and to remind me that, you know, that the Lord is ever present and that the choices that I make, because I have, you know, like I said, I'm pretty hard headed and it's taken me a long time, right? And so I have to be reminded pretty regularly.
We usually forget. As you started out, and I think your whole testimony has kind of been this answer, but if you pulled it together and you wanted to speak to the younger you that's seated right out here, how would you pull it together and go, this is what I would challenge myself at that age? What would you say?
Don't covet the things around you. Don't covet what other people have, because that's what I do. I coveted what other people had and thought that by making choices to make them my friends, I could get what they had.
That's good. All right, open it up to you guys. Questions for Jason? B.
Encourage them to, you know, just think about their actions. Don't negatively approach them, you know, but encourage them to just see that there's better choices. Because I think when people are negatively approached, they feel attacked. And when I feel attacked, I want to lash out in a way that's inappropriate. I guess just, you know, beyond the other part is just, pay attention, you know, pay attention to pay attention to, like, when I went to church, right, I didn't pay attention. So when I say pay attention, I mean, like, pay attention, listen, and absorb things that you might not think are important, you know, things that you might brush off, but at the end of the day, it is, stuff is important, you know, so listen.